So I'm sitting on a park bench on a Tuesday evening, 6:45 in May. It's a little bit windy. Park bench is on Richmond Green in Richmond upon Thames in Surrey, and I'm just in front of the Cricketers Pub, where a meetup happens, the Richmond New Technology meetup every month, and I am the speaker for tonight.
Hi everyone, I'm Andrea. I'm an engineer at PayPal, which is down the road, and for two main passions, technology and Southwest London, and well, I guess Stephen and Max meetup really matched these two
passions. I'm Darren, I'm a contractor, and I thought if I came here I could increase my typing speed by about 239 words.
Oh,
great.
quite remarkable. Yeah, which leads
us nicely to
Alice, who's these days has come over and said, I want to present about the Open Steno project, never heard of it. I started opening it up, it looked quite amazing actually. So, Alice.
Thank you, hello everyone. So we had a slight hiccup first in that my MacBook doesn't have a USB port, so we copied the slides onto here, which is great, apart from the fact that I've got some videos. So the part of it, I'll have to sort of show the laptop and the screen at the back. I've also come with, apparently Buzzwood is petting zoo, but some examples of kits and stuff that I've ended up buying for stupid reasons. I've also got a cold, I'm a bit deaf in one ear for some reason, so if I can't hear you, if you ask a question, I may need to ask you again. So apologies for that. And I've got about 50 minutes of content as well. And I can see the slides in the mirror in reverse, so I'm going to look at the mirror to see the slides, so I don't end up talking to the wall rather than talking to the wall. Go forward. Well, I structure this, it's a little bit about who I am, talking about typing and how we do it today, then what this thing called Steno is and how it works, and then some examples of how to actually do it, show how it works in practice. Okay, just a little bit about me first. So I put two presentations forward to Max. One was about what I do in the daytime, and another one was this hobby, and he went with the hobby one. So what I'm talking about today is just a hobby. It's nothing to do with really, not a great deal to do with the business that I co-own and run. I am a director and co-owner of a technical writing services company, and we also deliver training courses. And basically what we do is stop people like that looking puzzled at your product or software, getting stuck and getting frustrated, by providing help and other types of content for when they get stuck. So you would think that that would mean that I spend a lot of my time writing, but actually I'm kept away from the sort of delivery side of the business. My role is to do all the other stuff to support the business, finding work and chasing people that haven't paid, all that type of thing, and the training side of the business as well. So although a technical writer's job day, normally half of it's writing, the rest is planning and meetings. That's not true for me. What prompted me in this, looking at this, was that we have created a series of online training courses aimed at other technical communicators. And we began by doing some slides and then just talking about the slides. And then adding in videos and stuff like that. The difficulty with that was when something went wrong, if you needed to re-record it, you wanted to say exactly what you said before. And if you didn't have a script, then it got very difficult to do that. So we had to retrospectively create scripts and transcripts of what we'd said in the videos so that we could add and swap bits in as and when we wanted to. And also to provide subtitles for the training courses as well. And the other reason that prompted my interest in this is that I speak at conferences and go to conferences, and I'll blog about them. And this microphone's on because we're also looking at doing podcasts as well, so I'm recording this as well. And I'll write notes about what the speaker said, and there'll be somebody else I know, and she's also got a blog in Australia, and she'll make notes about what it is, and what she's got from the presentation and what I've got can be often two different things. So to make that note-taking easier, the other thing I wanted to do was look at, could I more effectively write transcripts and notes of at conferences and presentations as well. So that's just a little bit about me and what started me on this wild adventure. So, I don't know if anyone has said this or you've heard this, I can't write any faster, and I'm working as fast as I can. And we have this perception that we've learned how to type, and we've got to a certain speed, and we can't go any faster. And if we want to be more productive in a project, we look at lots of other things, but one thing we don't really try to improve is the speed at which we get content down into a written format. And does anyone know their speed, how fast they type? Oh, a couple of people.
90.
35. So there's lots of websites now where you can learn how to type, and racing sites as well, where you have a piece of text and you see if you can write it as quickly as you can. There'll be somebody else you're racing against who's also trying to write it. And these sites have accumulated lots and lots of data on how fast people write. And the actual average speed is pretty much what yours is. The average is 38 words per minute. Roughly about 40 words per minute. And my sister, when she started off in her career, she started British Airways, BAA, as a typist. And I think she had to do 50 words per minute or 60 words per minute. And a lot of professional typists, when in the days when we had typing pools and that, like that, would be about 60 to 95. Is that sort of speed you'd expect to get your people up to?
No.
No.
Not after a course, about 45.
45 after a course. Now, the problem with that is the speed at which I'm speaking now is about 160 to about 180 words per minute. And the trend is we're starting to speak faster. We're getting up to about 200 words per minute as well. And there's a bit of a gap between 38, 40 words per minute and 160. And I can't show you that video now. If you go to that, I can put the slides up. But to type, this is a guy called Sean Romer. He's the champion at typing. There's been a number of different typing competitions. And he's been recorded at in these competitions with some pretty challenging text, 165 words per minute. And if this video were to show, his hands are going like videos. They are going absolutely mad at the speed to get to do that particular speed. Now, I've been speaking about maybe 4, 5, 6 minutes. In that time, I've probably said about 720, maybe 1,000 words. So if somebody were here, like you, right, trying to copy down everything that I'm saying.
I'm just thinking about the fact that you're saying that, and I'm thinking I type about 60-something words per minute,
yeah.
And I'm not catching it.
So after 4 minutes, if you're at 60 words per minute, you're probably about 480 words behind. And in a day, you'll probably say, at a conference, there'll probably be about 65,000 words said. In an hour, again, probably maybe 10,000 words an hour. So that gap gets worse and worse and worse. So when it comes to the people that are doing the transcribing of video for doing subtitles and the like for TV, which you're probably familiar with, from what I understand, the ratio is about you need 60 minutes to transcribe 5 minutes of TV. And where we were with these videos that we created, we were at that. It took us hours and hours to create these scripts for these videos that we've done. And another thing, is anybody here deaf or hard of hearing? No one? Sorry, one person. Okay. Well, it's one person in every seven who is actually deaf. Now, we've got one in maybe 30 here. So often people who are therefore hard of hearing are excluded from events like this and other things because there are no, there's nobody captioning me. There are, is no subtitles in this event. That means that they could come here and see what's being said if they didn't, if they weren't necessarily have their hearing. And in fact, places like Harvard and MIT, they had this big thing of doing MOOCs, these open, massively open...
Massive online courses.
That's the word. And they got sued because they didn't have what the Americans call closed captions or subtitles on these courses. And so what they've had to do is they've pulled a lot of it off because of the time and effort it's going to take to actually add those captions onto it. And there's an act in America called Americans with Disabilities Act. There's one roughly equivalent in the UK called the Equality Act. But in the UK, you're expected to take reasonable steps, whereas it's a bit more demanding, so to understand. And so... what if we could break this assumption that we can't that we can't go any faster? So let me talk about how we could do that. And probably a number of you are what I'm thinking about, what I've described as the elephant in the room here, and that is, can't we just use speech recognition? Is anyone thinking that? Just like it. And speech recognition software can keep up with speakers that are about, that's speaking at 160, 180 words per minute. And that's the route that we started to go. We looked at Dragon, we looked at Siri as the way of transcribing our audios. But the problem with that is they are stuck at about 90% accuracy. There's been a big campaign or big news at the moment, I think it's IBM or maybe Microsoft, we've used Watson, they've come up with better algorithms, they've got to 95%. But an average sentence is maybe 10 or 25 words. If you're speaking, they can be even longer. So if you've got 90% accuracy, that means in every sentence there's one or two mistakes in it. And so you see this type of thing. I don't know if anyone's seen this type of thing on watching TV with the subtitles. Where the speech recognition has got things wrong. She's actually in a carriage,
They do that with speech recognition, not stenographers.
They do some of it with, they do it with a mixture of things. Some of it is speech recognition, some of it is speech.
I have a lot to say about this because I was involved in writing the pitch from a conglomerate of people who were trying to pitch against Ripley.
So this is a situation where they've done voice recognition and it's gone wrong. And so people like MIT and Harvard, when they said, okay, well, we'll use the YouTube automatic captioning, it's not accurate enough to meet the requirements that are expected in the States. And there's a site on Twitter called Silly Subtitles, and it's full of these weird, wonderful mistakes in the subtitling that you get. And for us, we in the world of technical writing, there's an excellent sound called Ditto or Dita. And so I'd be transcribing into Siri or into Dragon, and every time it would write Dita. And I tried 101 different ways to change the word ditto, and it still couldn't get it right. And it wasn't as straightforward as doing a search and replacing the word data, because I had the word data in there as well. And there's nothing more, there's a comedy sketch of two Scotsmen in a voice-operated lift stuck because it can never recognise the Scottish way of saying 11. And I felt like that comedy sketch in trying to get this course transcribed. Excuse me. So, speech recognition, there are problems with it. Some of them are at edge case situations. People with dialects and accents that it doesn't recognise. people that speak very quickly. I'd have to look around behind those. The other situation, specialist technology, for example, tech conferences, and made up words, that type of thing as well. But they're in some ways fixable. Those will be remedied over time. The problem, more fundamental, and why speech recognition has always been this future technology 3 years ahead, and then you go 3 years ahead and it's the future technology for 3 years ahead again, is because what it's doing is it's taking a wave pattern that's coming in of somebody speaking, looking at a database of words which have this shape of sentences for these wave patterns, and trying to match the two together. And if you've got garbage in, you're going to get garbage out. So if you've got bad input, bad quality audio because of background noise, or two people speaking over each other, or somebody speaks very quietly so it's not picked up, or somebody slurs their words, then it's not going to work. There have been a couple of new patents out to try and minimise the background noise, but this may be something that's never, ever really satisfactorily solved. So the way they work in some subtitling and in courts, in some situations where they can't get a stenographer, is they use what's called a re-speaker. And that's the person that has repeats everything that somebody's saying, but with a mask over their head. So they speak slowly and clearly. They've got the mask to hide any background noise that goes on. But even that, there's some problems, because it can be very tiring. On average, if they're doing it in a court, they'll do it for 30 minutes and they'll sort with another re-speaker. And again, if you have the subtitles on TV, sometimes you can get a sense that it's actually a re-speaker that is there. This is from Kanye West at Glastonbury, where this hit the headlines because the re-speaker forgot that they were talking into the mask. And as I said, it does get tiring, and in the end, the poor old person, I don't know if it's actually just stopped trying to re-speak. Also, the software is designed not to make it easy to say swear words. So this was coming out with 101 alternative ways of the profanities that he was saying on there, which also hit the headlines as well, because it was some very weird translations of words that sounded rude but weren't. So, excuse me, speech recognition might be the solution. It might come, but there's a chance, I would argue there's a chance that it's not going to be ideal, particularly in situations like courtroom, where whether you say I did do something or I didn't do it, it does matter if it's 10% inaccurate at different points, because it might end up with you being found guilty when you're not guilty. So stenography is steno, or stenography is that thing that's been around since the 1900s, with people in TV shows sitting at the front of courts tapping away on devices like this. This one's from about 30 years ago. And it's a form of shorthand, but rather than shorthand that you would, as journalists do, use pen and paper, it's done on a machine. And about 30 years ago, these got, it used to be bits of paper rolls that came out of these things. They got computerised about in the 80s, where you could connect them into a computer. Right. So how fast is steno? To be qualified as a professional stenographer, this is mainly in the States, to be certified you do a test at either 205, 225 or 240 words per minute. And so you're faster than somebody speaks. This means if there's a word that's tricky or holds somebody up, they can type it like a QWERTY word and they catch up with the speaker, make up that lost time. And they have world championships in steno. And the record is currently held by somebody called Mark the Wonder Kittlenbury. And that's 360 words per minute.
Not Mark the Steno.
So that is 6 words per second. And again, I've got a video which I can't show you of somebody stenoing at 300 words per minute, which is 5 words per second. And to pass those type of exams, you have to have 98 to 99.9% accuracy. Now you do your writing, then you can go back and correct it. So they give you a little bit of leeway. But you're expected to have one mistake on every four pages of A4 of content. And in fact, with the Brexit case, Dos Santos and Gina Miller, an hour after the court case ended, they had a stenographer, which is rare in this country, doing it. They had the transcript, 65,000 words, up on the website within an hour of the court case finishing, unreviewed, and I don't think there was a single error in it. Can I turn over? Right, now, this is the bit where I'll show you somebody actually doing it. So I'll have to sort of wave my my screen around. Let me do that. Right, can you see that? Now, on this, there is a little screen here with the words per minute. And I was going to ask you if you could shout out when it gets to 150, 200 and 240 words per minute. You're probably the only people that can be able to see this, so I may have to shout it out as well. Okay. So this is a guy called Stanley Sakai. Also have a look at how relaxed his hands are when we're typing. And what he's doing is transcribing Eminem's Lose Yourself. It does get a bit sweary a couple of minutes in, so I may cut it short. And I'll explain what these bits mean later.
One shot.
Can you see that?
One opportunity. Seize everything you ever wanted. One moment. Did you capture? Just let it slip.
Right.
Yo.
So that's 120 words per minute.
He's 197.
Again, 250 words per minute. Okay, so, could you see that well enough?
May I have a quick
And I'll skip that one, which is somebody with 300 words per minute. So if this kit is here, if there's this capable of writing at 240 words per minute, why aren't we all doing it now? And the reason is cost. These type of machines, the modern ones of these, cost between $2,000 and $6,000. These. Good question. Because they can in many ways. It's quite mechanical as well. There's little levers that go in there.
There's not even characters on the keys.
Yeah, we'll come to that. No, there's not even characters on the keys. The software that he's using is about $2,000, and then an $800 a year maintenance contract as well. And to be there are things called Steno schools in the States, and to be certified at those speeds, so you're able to go and work in a court, you're probably paying $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 for the training also. So it costs a lot of money to do that. And they position themselves, the manufacturers of this, and the training schools, excuse me, really as a high price, high end, high value niche product. These people, stenographers, that's the highest paid job for women in the States, for women who don't have a degree. And the average salary is, I think, $90,000 a year as a stenographer. Yeah, and in the States, they use them in the courts. They also have a thing called depositions in the States, where if you interview somebody, you can depose people and interview them as a lawyer, and then it's all recorded as well. So the only people that can afford that sort of price range are people in TV and the court system. And in TV, I think it's made mostly for live subtitling, where they, and when it's recorded, they can send it out to the Philippines or India and get it done more cheaply. But if it's live, you don't have the time, the luxury of waiting 48 hours for somebody to turn it around. So that was the situation, and there was a stenographer called Mirabai Knight who got a bit fed up with that, thought this was crazy. And so she instigated something called the Open Steno Project, which comprises three bits: software, hardware, and training. And I'll go through those three bits. So first bit is open source software. Open as in on GitHub, open as in free as in no cost as well. You can go to the Open Steno Project website and download Plover or Plover, and it's free to use. And it's a little Python application. So I've got it in my system tray here. I click on that and it runs in the background. And it's for Linux, it's for Mac, it's for Windows as well. And so what that does is you have a keyboard, a Steno keyboard, plugged into your USB ports. And you type on this, and what Plover does is it intercepts the messages and converts them into words. And so you can use it in Word, Chrome, Vim, whatever you're using. And that doesn't know what's happening. It just sees words as if this was a standard QWERTY keyboard that's generating the content. So that solved the problem of the software, that was free. The other side was this kit, spending thousands of pounds on that. And so the way it was designed was to work with things called mechanical keyboards, or NK rollover keyboards. Anyone heard of these? They look very old-fashioned. These are used by people who play computer games. And they've got inside them, rather than the membrane keys that we have on laptops, they have little mechanical switches like this that go up and down. The reason why people use these in gaming is you can push more than one key down at the same time and it will recognise it. Laptops you can only push about six keys down and then it won't recognise any more. With these you can push down a whole set of keys all at the same time. And these cost about £40 upwards. This one's was 65 quid. So your entry point becomes £65 basically. And that was the situation about 2 years ago, that if you wanted to do Steno, you'd get one of these, and you'd put little bits of plastic onto the keys to straighten them out so they're less staggered, or little coins you could glue onto to them as well, so that it was more lined up, like you get like these keys are lined up straight on the Steno machine. And then there was a guy called Joshua Lifton, who runs a company called Crowd Supply, which does 3D printing and other open source software. And he was going to launch something called the Stenosaurus, which was a 3D printed, dedicated Stemmer keyboard. That never came to life, but it prompted a number of people to do a similar thing. So there have been a number of projects that have been coming, one of which is called Stenotopus, and what you can do is download a file, go to a local makerspace, and for about £3 worth of the plastic, you can 3D print something like this that sits on top of your keyboard, take the keys off, and you can convert one of these to be more like a traditional steno keyboard. And I was ill last time, so I missed you speaking, but you've got 3D printers at your...
Yeah, we have a couple of
keyboards. Yeah, it's about 11 hours of printing, apparently. So you've got the time of... You've got the materials, which is about £3, and then you've got the time of whatever's charged for the time for it to be printed.
17,000
pounds.
11 hours of
So there's all these people that like hacking hardware and fiddling with mechanical keyboards and doing 3D printing, and this is an ideal project for people like that. And so a guy called Scott Arita developed one called, it's got the weirdest name, it's called Soft Love, which has meaningless in it. And what this is it's a 3D printed steno keyboard with ABS plastics on the top, and then these little types of things underneath. And this is you can buy this and ship it over to the States. It's £135. So we've gone down. So you've got something that's very close to one of those for £135,000. And another guy called Charlie Shattuck has come up with one called the Stenomod. And me being a sucker, buy these. And this is like that. It's got a little Arduino chip on it, and these little keyboards. They're all lined up, and this one's about £200. You plug it into your laptop, your computer. You run the Plover software, and this is like your Steno machine. It comes with a bit of wood as standard. But I think you can upscale it and have them separate. So the third bit is training and these Steno schools. And the aim is not... So one of the philosophies of all of this is that if you imagine music and a guitar, you've got professional people that play the guitar. But if you want to learn the guitar, you don't have to pay for a £5,000 top-of-the-range guitar to learn how to play the guitar. You don't have to go to guitar school to do it. You can buy a ukulele. You can buy a cheap guitar and learn yourself. And some people will just be happy plodding along, screeching out tunes. Some people actually end up like Brian May and be able to be a professional guitarist as well. There's been no route from amateur to be an amateur or to go from amateur to professional. And so this third bit is to create games and training material so people can teach themselves. And there's one, there's a book online which is free, or you can get it off Amazon for $10, I think it is, Learn Plover or Plover. And there's been a crowdfunding thing to create some games on Steam. So anyone else Steam? Steam's a platform for playing computer games. And it's a free game. There's a couple. Well, there's one at the moment which is free called Steno Hero. You have a song, and the words of the song appear, and you have to copy what the song, those words that appear, are as the song goes along. This is known. There's a game called. Has anyone heard of a game called Dark Souls? Apparently, it's the hardest computer game on Steam. This has been called the Dark Souls of Titan games because various people looked at this, tried it with this traditional keyboard, and didn't get anywhere because it was just so fast. And the other thing that's happening in this wonderful world of Steno is that it's being used outside of the courtroom in other areas. And the most common one is in tech conferences. Again, with this accessibility issue of people who are therefore hard of hearing, or people where English isn't their first language, and they may not be certain if what somebody said was correct or not. or people go out of the conference room and they come into another talk, they want to see what's happened in that. And so what, I don't know if anyone's seen this at conferences, where you'll have the transcript of what the speaker is saying as they're talking live in that environment. This is becoming popular. And there'll be a person like this chap here who's transcribing, or there'll be somebody on Skype listening in and then doing it. And this is broadcast over a web page, so somebody can be reading what the transcript is on their phone, on their tablet, or it can be projected onto a screen and they can see it as the person is speaking. And another area where it's being used, and again there's another video which I can't show because these are just pictures, is in coding for programmers. Because a lot of commands in coding, like the brackets and parentheses and asterisks, are all the keys that are at far away from the centre of the keyboard. They're the hard-to-get-at ones, and a lot of programmers end up with RSI because because they're having to stretch with their finger. I think there's a thing called Vim Pinky, where some of the commands in Vim, which are a programming environment, sort of real stretches, and people can end up getting a strain in their hands.
They're not using the right keyboards. I was spoken for 15 years. I used the IBM Model M, which is a mechanical keyboard.
Yes.
No RSI.
And some people use things like Colmac or Norman, which are other layouts, because they're more, they don't get you any faster, but they do, they're more relaxing on the hand. The problem with things like these other layouts is if you then go to somebody who's got a QWERTY layout, your brain goes mad because it's like using a foreign or German or French or whatever keyboard. And another area where I'm really using it, a lot of the other people involved with this, is to write letters, write blog posts, do the stuff you'd normally use a keyboard for. And we've got one thing coming along the horizon. There's two projects that Google are doing, Project Sony and Project Jacquard. And what they're looking to do is to embed into Levi's, one of their partners, into other people, interfaces for computers. So if you're cycling along and you want to skip a track on your iPad, you can tap and it will go forward. Now, if you want to do more than just play, pause, stop on your clothing, then it's not really going to be that practical to have a QWERTY keyboard running up your arm or down your leg. So if we do get to a situation where we can compose letters on our underpants or on our trousers, send an email and get a cheap thrill, we're not going to be able to do it really. It's not probably going to be practical to do it with QWERTY. So we're going to probably need to do a layout like Steno to do that. And one of the advantages of Steno is it's been around for 100 years. There's lots of training material, so it's tried and tested and proven, so it's a good choice to make.
There was I can't remember the details, but I worked for Cyanfin on Sims, and I remember the chap who invented, you could type on a five-fingered,
yep,
do the full alphabet. Who was that? Remind me.
I know what you mean, I can't remember what it's called.
You could do the whole thing.
Newton
five,
as well.
Sorry?
And the Newton as well, about the same time.
Well, yeah. I think this was before.
This had a hand.
It was before that.
Pain if you're left-handed like me, because
you haven't told us, sorry, forgive me, how difficult it is to learn Steno.
All right, we'll get to that. Oh, now. Right. I'm glad you asked me that.
Because that seems fairly critical, right?
Yeah. So, okay, let's. So,
is it easier than playing guitar?
Probably not. So, big build-up. We've got a problem. We've got subtitling. We need to do Steno's. Speech recognition doesn't work. Steno does. How do you actually, what is it? What, I haven't really told you what it is yet. So as somebody said, there's nothing written on these keys. This Steno has a 22 key layout. And it's phonetical. And it goes in order. So the first thing you have to do is learn the layout. If you can remember the word Steph, then you can probably remember the top layer of the keyboard. If you can remember the word skewer, you can probably remember the bottom row as well. You can remember my memory thing was really big girls' sizes, was the way I remember the bottom one there. Front page limited, you can deal with that. So your hands go curled, and they sit in the middle like this on all of the keys. So what's happening when Stanley was doing that video was he was pushing the keys like you push chords on a piano, and then you lift off. And once you lift off, it recognises the input. So you can push one key down, or you can push three keys down, or you can push 22 keys down, because you can put your hand between the two in that way. So it comes out with this weird stuff. And the way that it's based is it's a phonetic approach, in that you start with a consonant, a vowel, and then a final consonant. And the analysis that Ward Island did back in the 1900s of words, he arranged these letters in a way that matched word frequency in the English language. So there are only three words in the English language where a P precedes a T. So so you go ST, and then you can have a vowel, and then the ending consonant of a word. I'll explain that a bit. So what that Stanley is doing is he's pushing down with his left hand, he's pushing down, he's pushing the H, the R with his that finger, he's pushing the A and the O with his finger, his thumb I should say, and then the B and the G with two fingers on that side, and letting go. So it's like playing chords on a piano. So it's phonetical. So you don't write words as they are written in language, you write them as they sound. So if you're writing the word head, you type H-E-D. let go, so you push down with three fingers, let go, and what appears is the word head. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you might have spotted there's words missing, or sounds missing, from the keyboard. So for example, if you take the word soon, where's the N? How do you write N for soon? And how do you differentiate between some and soon? And the answer is that the reason why there's no letters on the keyboard is because they serve more than one function. And so if you hold two keys down at the same time, with your finger like this, that actually makes another word. So you've got with these D, B, and L, N over here. So if you can remember the word double, you can know the ones where you hit double the keys. That's the way of remembering what they are. And there's some that go widthways as well. So there's a learning curve of learning an alphabet of where these things are. So how do you write the word soon? You hit S, you hit those two to make that OO sound in soon, and you hit that for the N. If you wanted to do some, it'd be S-O, just the one N, just the O.
So five letters to write four then?
Yeah, in that situation, but it's all at the same time. It's down, up, right. Down, up, down, up, like that. So your fingers just go up or down that way, and then in and out. So there's a dictionary of all these vowel sounds that match with different words. And you can add to that dictionary things that you want for yourself. So I use my name, I use my email address lots of times. So I can create, add to the dictionary words that aren't necessarily in there, like my name, or short, or what are called briefs, for things like my email address. And so if somebody comes along and says, okay, write supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, there's six vowels in that. You can write a shortcut, which works as suffrage, and you push that down, which is six fingers, let go, and that will come out straight away. And that's how they get to this 5 words per second. So when Stanley was doing it, he was doing the row, let and go, and the dictionary is looking at these commands and translating them. So T-U-N-T is the shortcut brief for opportunity. W-U-N is one for one opportunity. H-O-T is shot. And so in the English language, it's a thing called the schwa sound. If we take the word like chocolate, it's actually three vowels, chocolate. But it doesn't really matter that sound in there. If you just say chocolate, it's not going to be confused with anything else. So to save time, what it does, I don't know if pen shorthand does the same thing, is it cuts out these sounds that we have in the English language. So you get shortcuts like peripheral for the word peripheral, and that saves you time as well. So back to your question, how long? Probably to get to a speed where you're faster than you are today, 2 to 3 months. To get to 90, 100, you probably need to practice it every day for about a year, and you'll get to that speed. It depends. If you're good at computer games, you're probably good at this. If you're rubbish at computer games like me, it will take you longer. Will you get to 240 words per minute? Some people will, but it's like, you play the guitar, will you get to a level where you could be a professional guitarist or professional pianist? Some people will, but my attitude is, if I get to 180 words per minute, if I can go to conferences and record what people do, if I can record my transcripts, then that does it for me. I'm not looking to be a professional subtitler or work in a courtroom as a court reporter. I've probably increased my typing speed fivefold, and that will do for me. So how quickly to learn that layout? Took me a weekend. Just wrote out some mnemonics to learn the layout. To understand this idea of consonant, vowel, and it's sound-based, probably takes you 2 weeks to do that. And then as you practice, you're just learning what you need to press for the words that you want to come out. And that takes months and months. And one of the challenges I have is I know the O key, I push down with my left thumb. If I want the letter O, sound O to do it, that's what I do. And I go to do it, and this thumb comes down. So I go to write the word or, and it comes out as er, because my brain and my hands don't necessarily talk to each other in the right way.
So, Ellis, I think we are at questions, right, now?
I think we are, yeah. So
good.
Any
questions?
So what do you believe is the worldwide population of
stock? Oh, I don't know.
Seven.
It's mostly in the States. In this country we have a thing called Palantir, which is still around by a few people, but not many. If you think that pretty much every court in America is going to have, every courtroom in America is going to have a stenographer. Plus, a good chunk of live TV in America is done by that. You're probably tens of thousands, but not hundreds of thousands, I would say.
With the open source movement, does that not make anyone nervous that they are potentially chipping away at a quite lucrative career for people in that group?
They are, but the problem is that everyone thinks this is going out of date, that these machines are going to be replaced by speech recognition and that if you go on these courses and spend all this money, you're taking a risk and you'll never get the money back. So there's actually a shortage of qualified court reporters in the States. So one of the motivations for this is that people can do it as a hobby and enjoy it. A percentage of those would want to do it as a full-time career and would migrate into that. So there are a lot of stenographers are women in their 40s and 50s, but not necessarily that familiar, I've had much contact with open source, and so they are slightly wary of it, but there is this need to get young blood and more people into that profession in the States. But there is this other agenda from what the people doing it on the open source side are coders, who want to be able to program in a more relaxed way, people like me that have got a need for training or recording stuff at conferences. Does that answer the question?
No, I'm just saying, is there not any nervousness about effectively potentially disrupting the career that's keeping quite a big cadre of women workers in the workplace?
Yeah.
That some coders have decided to disrupt that market and potentially open the door to anyone who can pay a couple hundred bucks for stuff.
Well, you've got the kit, you've then got to learn how to use it. And so, if I understand that some people are a bit worried about it, but the overall is generally positive, is that it's a new, interesting way of getting into this world. Right.
I'm just wondering how coders do the brackets and slashes and ampersands and asterisks and all that.
So, bracket is BRKT. So you
just spell it out.
So you get Brooks, and that produces the symbol for an open bracket. And if you do BRKT, and there's a middle thing called an asterisk, that does the closing bracket. Pren is parentheses, and prend is the end parentheses.
What about a new line?
Back key and that key pushed down at the same time.
Just a dot.
Full stop is those two you just push down.
What about if you're using Word and you want to do bold, so Control B, can you do stuff like that?
You can do Control B, Control X, Control C. What you can't do is what's called sticky modifiers, where you do Control B C or Control Alt Z or something, which is what some people use in Vim. They have what's called sticky modifiers. That you can't do. You can only do one stroke, so you can do any Control or A, Alt A, that. And that is
a
dictionary. You can put that in a dictionary and map it to wherever you want.
Windows has sticky keys, does it not? I always end up invoking it accidentally, so it obviously does. It works.
Shouldn't be in front of your keyboard.
Sorry?
Should be eating in front of your keyboard.
It's falling over. It's in my head.
So, yeah, well, they have a court reporters association in the States, which seems to be the main thing, with 20,800 members. Oh. So that's about the number, apparently. Maybe a few more. And has nobody started using a foot pedals for any of these, like a church organist?
Well, people, if they're stopping and starting yoga recordings, they'll often use a foot pedal to stop that so they can carry on typing. I don't know of anyone that's actually entering text using their feet as well as their hands. That's another level. No, I don't know anyone.
With some training, you can get to 200 words per minute. But I was wondering, what's the average number of words per minute for a person talking?
160 to 180 words per minute.
What about other languages?
Other languages. So there is work on Portuguese, Spanish, Korean. Somebody started on German. There's a thing called the Stenograph Corporation in the States that's got some dictionaries and layouts for foreign languages. Chinese. It works well with things like Chinese and Japanese, where keyboards are more complicated anyway. There is some challenges with that, and there is further work that needs to be done, because the layout of that STPH is optimised for the English language and the frequency in which the words lie. For other languages, it's more difficult. In other countries, they can't grow from. France has got something called Vertile. In Italy, they've had something since the 1870s, which is a piano keyboard. If you look at in the Italian Parliament, they have a square table, four people sitting around it, all looking like they're playing the piano, whilst the members of the Italian Parliament are actually talking. And that's this thing has been computerised now. But that's the way they do it in Italy, and it looks like they're playing the piano, which is absolutely bonkers. So, yeah.
I just wanted to check in the background for the re-speakers in live subtitles in the UK. They tend to have the recognition engines are trained to a cadre of people. There's a limited number of people who are very well trained in the system.
Right.
So, they're often on live broadcast. They're, if it's new and it's got new technical terms, or it's likely to say it's a political debate, etc., they'll tend to spend some time in the run into the show. They'll teach any new words that are likely to come up. So
right.
So the re-speaking tends to be very better than the straight machine ones that you see elsewhere on other channels.
Right. And so what happens if there's a word... So some preppers sometimes on the conferences where people get names or terminology and add it to their dictionary. If they get stuck, they can add words on the fly as they go along. So they'll slow down, get behind the speaker, add that word in, and then because they can go faster than the speaker, they can catch up.
Okay.
So if anyone has a touch and feel of any of these, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you, Alan.
And you just to play with it, you just need to get one of these. For about 50 quid. Yeah.
Okay. So Alice, I think it's available for any questions. Eric?
Just do one.
Just say the infant in the room, how fast are you?
Oh, I'm terrible. I'm about 40 to 45. So I'm faster than I was when I was QWERTY typing. I don't do enough practice, that's the problem. And also I have this, I haven't grown up with computer games, so I'm terrible at computer games. So I'm not a good example of the speed that you can get to, I'm afraid. But I'm fine, I'm practicing. I'm ahead of the game with this, anyway.
Certainly passionate about it. That's good. Thank you.
So I'm back in the car after speaking. And I think it went quite well. The recordings I did on three different machines, I don't think it came out on the main one that I did, so we'll see what the quality is like on the others. A lot of questions, a lot of interest in how it relates to subtitling. There's a guy who's involved with subtitling on television in the UK, and he was talking about some of the difficulties, how actually using voice recognition software, there's only a few people that can do this re-speaking and get to the levels that are there. A few people thought it was my project, that I was the developer, which isn't the case. But it's a fun group, a good net meetup group involved with technology. Interesting to hear there's more startups around Hounslow in the southwest of London than there are around Silicon Roundabout. As a tech hub, southwest London is actually considerably bigger than the sort of tech Silicon Roundabout cluster there. So we'll see how this podcast comes out, how this recording comes out, first attempt, and go from there.